Hey, hey, welcome to another edition of Connor's Basement. Today we're going to be talking about Lifted, Bright Eyes' 2002 album, which I would say, and I mean we will say later on, kind of greatly changed the trajectory of the sound, and really, you could argue, the career of Bright Eyes as a band. First, just our Patreon shout out. Want to give a big thanks to Lad and Goldie for their continued support. If you'd like to hear your name read, check out connorsbasement.com/support, and you can support us on Patreon. Otherwise, check us out on Instagram at Connor's Basement. All that being said, I'll stop talking and, well, I guess I'll start talking again. Bye. Can I get a goddamn timpani roll to start this goddamn podcast?
Tonight!
It's a goddamn podcast.
For all you goddamn people.
Who won't just shut up. I think that's what he says there, right? He says, like, very faintly, who won't just shut up, right? I'm pretty sure. We should have checked ahead of time. Now we sound like idiots. Well, I sound like an idiot, I guess.
No, or we could just retcon it and we could just say that we want everybody to please have a respectful low volume when you're listening to our podcast. Please, yeah. give our art the quality time it deserves. Don't put it on in the car. No. You pour yourself a nice glass of brandy. You sit in your nice armchair by your mantle, you know, because everybody has an armchair, brandy, and a mantle. So sit by there, kick your feet up to the hearth, and just listen. Just listen to us. Don't be distracted.
Wow. That was beautiful. And you really set the scene there. A regular old Connor Oberst, if I do say so myself.
Just, you know, one of us average indie music lovers that just happens to own a mansion and a fireplace.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's probably at least like four or five of us, I'd say.
Don't mess with us. We don't exist.
Well, welcome if you are here. You probably are a return listener. If you're not, at least hopefully you looked at the name of the podcast. Welcome to Connor's Basement, the podcast that is about the basement of Connor Oberst, the physical basement itself.
Yeah, based on the hit Basement,
yeah,
comes this podcast.
It's kind of crazy how much we can talk about a single basement. You know, I mean, there's just so much. There's the floor, and there are the walls, even.
The load-bearing Krusty the Clown posters.
Don't take them off. The entire place might come down. we're going to be talking this episode today. We're going to be talking about Lifted. Which is probably one of the most storied albums in the Bright Eyes discography. I'd say, like, if you talk to someone, most likely they would either say Lifted or I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning as being maybe their intro and their, like, their favorite album. Am I too off base there, or does that sound like in line with your experience?
No, that definitely, anecdotally speaking, I feel like most people, when I talk about Bright Eyes, there's one of two paths. It's either, oh, you mean from that Zillow commercial, or the fuck you talking about?
That's true. The second one. Very true, actually.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. But of the people who actually know what I'm talking about when I say, like, oh, I like Bright Eyes, they'll typically say, like, First Day of My Life, or Lover I Don't Have to Love, or Bowl of Oranges, and mm-hmm. all of those come from, like, Wide Awake, It's Morning, and Lifted. So yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah, it's like, you know, after Fevers and Mirrors kind of really put Bright Eyes out there as, like, okay, this is someone to pay attention to in this scene, following it up then with Lifted was just, like, an ascent. Right? Because I mean, we talked about
how... Was that pun intended?
Oh, hey. Yeah, hell yeah. Of course it was. yeah. I mean, we talked about, like, Fevers and Mirrors is our favorite album. That's why we went on and on about it many moons ago. But I think for, like, Lifted, I would say critically, was one that really, really got, like, a lot of acclaim, I'd say, from I guess a wider audience and less maybe just this like small niche of people that were into this kind of weird indie music that was developing in the 90s and, you know, early 2000s.
And I guess kind of that preps us. Do you want to maybe jump in a little bit? Because you're our resident historian. Do you want to give us like some album info? And do you know about it, the critical reception that it got at the time?
I mean, I don't know specifics, but I do know that this one was definitely more well received than Fears and Mirrors.
Not surprising, to be yeah. fair.
You know, the website that shall not be named, but I will, otherwise you won't know who I'm talking about, Pitchfork, I think kind of like famously re-reviewed Fevers and Mirrors, I think at the 10-year mark or something like that, and jumped the score by like 3 points. Cause when it came out, it didn't.
They listened to our podcast and they realized yeah. like, oh, these guys know what they're talking about more than Pitchfork, and we should up the score to appease our new dark gods.
Exactly. Yeah, I you know, so that's one site and a controversial site at that. But, you know, I think it's safe to say Fevers and Mirrors was pretty well received, but definitely not at the level of Lifted. And I think because there is more wide appeal on it. So Lifted comes out in 2002, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. So like Fevers and Mirrors comes out in 2000. Just how quickly to turn around and start the writing process as both Connor, Mike, and others that are involved. And then turn out Lifted, which is this like beautiful, soaring, grand album. It's just kind of amazing how quickly the sound shifts. I mean, they were probably writing parts of this album while they were on tour for Fevers and Mirrors. It's crazy to think about.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I had not had it put in that perspective before. So, yeah, they must have been, like, jamming either, like, just fucking around on stage or, like, between shows, because that is a short amount of time to, like you say, have such a big change in sound and with such a little turnaround. Yeah, truly, truly wild, especially considering the... I think we've definitely said this before, but like the leap from Letting Off the Happiness and Fevers and Mirrors is nowhere as close as the leap from Fevers and Mirrors to Lifted. It's such a wide change.
For sure. Yeah, you get less of that like gritty, dark. I was going to say there's no like Arianette type song, but you know, not to get into it already, but like Don't Know When But A Day's Gonna Come, like that's probably the darkest you're gonna get on Lifted, whereas a lot on Fevers and Mirrors is that it is like in that realm. I think Lifted has a much more positive aura to it, even if the subject matter isn't always that. I think musically and sonically you get a little bit more of that. Again, not to get ahead of ourselves, but the closing track, As much of a finger point as that is, it you're like jumping in your seat. You're like, okay, hell yeah! If you didn't listen to the lyrics, you would think like it's just like a fun, happy song.
Yeah, I mean that's sort of one of the more remarkable things about. I'm glad that you brought up Don't Know When But A Day's Gonna Come, because I don't know if we're really gonna have much to say about it, but it is a jarring song. I feel yeah. like you could take that out and you wouldn't lose. Like that sounds, I feel really shitty saying that because that's an awful thing to say about anybody's art. But I do feel like that could have been part of an EP. Like, oh, we meant for this to be on the album and it really kind of doesn't fit the rest of the album. Maybe like, as you're saying, lyrically it does. Lyrically it fits the album. But sonically, like how do you get from that to Nothing Gets... Like, Bowl of Oranges to Nothing Gets Crossed Out would make a lot of sense.
Right.
But that one song in there, and I don't know, maybe there is a point, maybe there is something I'm missing here. I don't, that's just the one jarring note in an otherwise very pleasant sounding album.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's interesting. Kind of like, it is kind of that black sheep in a sense. amongst it from again, from a musical standpoint, like you're saying. But yeah, I, in terms of like people that appear on the album, it's really the same group of people that we hear on other albums. So nothing too surprising there. So I don't know what goes into such a stylistic sound. And, you know, part of you would maybe think like, okay, maybe this is where Nate gets involved, but he actually doesn't come until a little later.
Yeah, so it's actually funny that you bring that up, because I think one of the things that I noticed lyrically about this album is, and this is complete, this is unfounded, this is feels over the reels, but this feels more larger and more open of a world, if that makes any sense. Like,
yeah.
Fevers and Mirrors, like, it was bigger as far as there was like the themes and motifs of being known as an artist to a larger community, of being like put on as a spectacle. But this album feels more like I get the feeling that Connor's on tour. I get the feeling that he's like out of Omaha. He's gone. He's doing other things. And in ways that, like, even like the first song, getting into it, it starts with people getting into a car and driving. Like, it,
right.
it sets up to me that this is a much larger world than we've been introduced to so far in the Bright Eyes canon.
It's like Letting Off the Happiness takes place at Connor's house in various basements, his friends' houses. And then maybe you could say Fevers and Mirrors is a little bit more like Omaha as a whole, but it is still a very homegrown kind of story. And this transitions into maybe like some of the overall themes I saw on the album too. But like, this is definitely more worldwide, more universal on it. Like you said, it's Connor on tour, and universal is definitely one of the main things that I pulled out for my themes. You know, fame definitely continues to be a major one, which was one we discussed quite heavily on Fevers and Mirrors. And even a couple of the songs on No Beginning to the Story, the EP preceding this. And so I think like this is where too, like, Connor's more observational and narrative writing starts to take place. It's less internal and me, 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 and a little bit more, I'm seeing this and here's how I'm making sense of it in my lens, which I think shows like quite a big shift and development for him as a writer. And you could probably even say as a person, right? And I don't mean that in terms of I know Connor personally, and boy, he grew up so much then. But I'm talking more like universally as like human development, you know, when we start focusing on outside world and a little less on ourselves, it's kind of like a shift that we can see happening in the writing. And the last thing I'll say too, is overall, I'll say like my main theme of the album is an exploration into the existential, which isn't new, but I think he really goes into it here, that search for meaning in our lives. And I think that for me is like the core subject that Connor is investigating on Lifted.
Yes. So I 100% agree with that. I think I was going to take the very unsophisticated take of I was not going to put it as elegantly as like that existential exploration that you're talking about, but rather that whole Lifted as like the title of the album is also kind of the recurring motif, and the theme of the story is like that kind of ascension. And each story more or less, or like each song in the album more or less has some sort of story or arc about being lifted, about ascending something or failing to. I read a novel quite a while ago called Freedom by Jonathan Franzen. And this is very fucking weird. Somebody gave me this book because they were in a bookstore, saw the cover, and it's like, okay, this seems like a pretty cool book. And they just opened it to a random page. And they opened it to a chapter where the protagonist
is trying to get Connor Oberst to be part of like some sort of movement or like civil rights thing. And then they gave me the book because they're like, oh, dude, I was in the bookstore and I opened the book and suddenly they were talking about Connor Oberst. So here's this book. And they were it took place when Lifted was on tour, like when they were touring for Lifted. And they made that point of like, oh, yeah, did you know that like every song in the album has to do like in some way or form with being air quotes lifted? That always stuck in my head, which is so strange. I was never expecting to like hear about Bright Eyes or Connor Oberst outside of just listening to the music. So that was like a weird kind of odd confluence of things that happened in my life.
Man, writers, they're just like us. They're fans too.
Oh man, the true fans.
Yeah, I definitely although I didn't see the same thing, I'm not saying it's not there. I'm saying I wasn't as observant as you were about that ascension being on every track. I definitely like I wrote down too. It seems like Connor is trying to pull himself from the depths of Fevers and Mirrors, which in a way, you know, it's that ascension. It's trying to pull yourself up as the hungry beasts below try. You're snapping at your heels.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah,
nicely done.
But I guess with that being said, I don't know if you have any other pieces to pull out, but maybe. You know, you already mentioned Big Picture. You want to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So Big Picture, a big way of opening the album. Definitely one of the, I think, more interesting ways that Bright Eyes have kicked off one of their albums. And a little piece of trivia, I really neither here nor there, but the people, I didn't know this until pretty recently, the people that are talking and getting into the car are Jenny Lewis and one of her bandmates from Rilo Kiley. So I'm sure a lot of people do know that Connor and Jenny are really good friends, but I thought that was so awesome. It was like, oh, so that's her like singing along and everything in the beginning. But
I love that.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to say. Not on the song overall, but just to start it. And I'll let you kind of get your first blow in.
Yeah, so I think this is sort of the thesis statement of the whole album. I think it very elegantly ties together a lot of what you were saying as far as like that, these explorations into the existential. I mean, the first opening lines, the picture's far too big to look at, kid, your eyes won't open wide enough. It's an admission that like, oh, the world's bigger than I thought it was. And there's no way that I can really wrestle with everything all at once. How do I fit myself into this world?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's just such a great opening that like people are driving in a car and like based on the conversation, it's like they don't really know where they're going. The person driving isn't used to like driving in the snow. And the music is presumably coming from the radio in this opening skit. So it's like Connor is literally on the road and in a wider audience and in a bigger picture. And I just think that's just an interesting way to start the album, especially since like, as we have been saying, like a lot of these songs are just absolute fucking bops. They're absolute bangers. They slap my entire body. And yet like it ends horribly, horribly grimly, but I'm also kind of rushing there. Do you have any like opening takes on or favorite lines or anything like that from this one?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on some of the same things that I wanted to say, but I was wondering too, like, is Connor maybe talking to his younger self, or is he just talking to any person? You know, I do kind of get the sense he's almost like giving some advice. Almost the way he's delivering it, that he's found, he's getting closer to his understanding of the world, and it's almost like he wants to share that knowledge with other people, which I think ties into maybe a lot of this album, that exploration and also his findings as he has done that exploration. I do think it's interesting though, because his anger does still come through in yeah. the song. It's classic Connor. I think I love the fact that it's there. But what's interesting is I see it where he distances himself from others, and he's almost like accusatory with the way he's admonishing them, I guess, for not being willing to express or willing to be. And what I hear is it could be, I'm not saying specifically it is that same person, but it's almost like on Spindle Fever Darkness Necklace, which I can't believe I said correctly, on Fevers and Mirrors, where he talks about how he's bearing it all, but this other person, they're going to be quiet and they're going to hide their secrets, but not him. And it does sound almost accusatory, as if he's in the right for letting it all hang out in a way.
That's interesting. And I think, well, two things. What you said reminded me, I heard somewhere once that like when you're giving advice, you're really having a conversation with yourself in the past. Like,
interesting.
Here, you should do this or X, Y, and Z. And it's like, are you giving me advice out of the goodness of your heart, or you genuinely see that? Or are you kind of thinking to yourself in some part of your brain, like, I wish I had heard that in the past? And like right. giving advice and like coming from that like sagely position is more of like a correction or like a rewriting, like, oh, I know this now, so let me assert that I know it now because I didn't in the past. Mm-hmm. Or I wish I had known it in the past.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you bring up the proud wearing of the heart on the sleeve and, you could keep quiet, but I like singing. Even as early as the actual first album, A Collection of Songs, there was one song that always jumps out at me where like one of the lyrics is something along the lines of like, just let me turn the amp up real loud or something like that. Like that's always been part of his. Yeah, no, go for it. What is it?
Let me turn the amp way up so you can't hear a thing.
That's interesting because it's almost like, I don't know, if I say it so loud that you can't understand me, then like I still said it and I said it loud.
Or maybe it's like you can hear nothing but him.
Yeah, you drown out everything else except for this truth.
Yeah.
But just the idea of wanting to be loud, wanting to be heard, or like wanting to use your voice despite like, I don't know. I'm getting a little inkling of maybe a preamble of Road to Joy. Where like failures always sounded better. I could have been a famous singer if I had someone else's voice. Like the fact that he makes references to the fact that like, hey, I like singing. As though somebody had been like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, is this really like what you're, I don't know. That's how I
do. You want to put all of your personal shit out there for people to hear, which is a question I think Connor also asks himself, obviously at various points.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And again, not to like rush to the end of the song, but you kind of get that at the end too, where it's like completely unfettered, unbridled, just fucking screaming into the void. Which is very much in line with like, you know, I don't know necessarily if it was a like within the story of this song, is it good that it ends with him screaming about how you should just like surrender and die, whether that's to be taken literally or if like we want to explore the poetic meaning behind that.
And then I have something that I can throw there, but
yeah, you go for it.
So for that specifically, I think he gives you the two choices, right? You can either like fight and keep going on, or you can die, right? Those are your two choices in the scenario. Which, yeah, it sounds like super grim, but at the same time, that's like one of the core tenets of existentialism as just like a philosophy, this freedom of choice and freedom of will. So you could talk about the fact that you can get sort of locked into this feeling that you don't have a choice, right? Because, well, life sucks and life is hard and it's, what's the point in trying, you know? And well, what's the alternative? And someone might say, I don't have another alternative. I have to just keep going. But the truth is you do have another alternative, as poor an alternative it may be. If you are making the choice that you're going to stay alive, that's still a choice that you made, no matter how forced it sounds, or no matter how forced it is, really. So that kind of goes back into that existential theme that no matter what, if you're complaining about the fact that you have to be alive, you've made the choice that you're going to keep fighting. So that's something that I saw jump out at me when I read that, those final lines, and I don't know, it ties in perfectly for how I'm reading it. So maybe I'm twisting it in a way that works for me.
No, I get that. And this is it's definitely one of those lines that I struggle with, because like, I do like what you're saying, and I do, I don't know. I just can't like get over the fact that like, at the end of the song, with like really not much more room to like interpret, the choice, as you're saying, is between struggling or giving up. And that just like didn't and still doesn't sit well with me. And I know it is the introduction of an album. So it's like there's plenty of room left to explore that idea. And I mean, it's also nested in metaphor. So it's like it's using the metaphor of being like fished out of water. And so like we don't need to take it literally, and we don't, you know, letting go and being lifted to the sky might not be a bad thing. It might just be perhaps a transformation as opposed to, you know, annihilation.
Right. But I do want to say, and because maybe I misspoke, but it really wouldn't be between like struggling and death, right? But like, life requires effort and life is difficult. So no matter what, at certain points, you're going to struggle. You're going to have to fight. And that's an inevitability if you choose that path of living. So, you know, I know it sounds grim of you either have two options, you either struggle or you die. And that is definitely grim, but it's also an inevitability. It's one of like the four noble truths too of Buddhism, that inherent in life is suffering. But the connotation that we have for suffering is obviously one that is very negative, but it's also one that provides opportunity too. And that's the way when you view it through an existential, or, you know, I'm not well versed on Buddhism or anything, but I'd have to assume from the Buddhist lens that it's suffering by means of growth, basically. So I felt like I wanted to throw that out there to kind of like make it seem a little less grim that you either life is bad or you die. It's just like you have to live with these inevitabilities, basically.
Yeah, totally. I get that. And I like your spin on it. The thing that just makes me super uncomfortable with it, though, is like, you could struggle in the water, be too stubborn to die, or you can just let go and be lifted to the sky. It seems almost like it's condemning the person who chooses to struggle in the water. And that's the thing that upsets me, I guess, more than anything. Like, it's almost like you could be a complete idiot and flounder around, and you know, you can choose to struggle and suffer, or you could just give up. It's almost like, to me, and maybe it's just me being negative and reading too much into it, but it seems more like he's putting more of a virtue on the ascension of the being lifted than of the struggle. And I feel like your analysis is more like, I like your analysis that, you know, that struggling and abusing this stubbornness is like a way of growing, like,
yeah,
having some grit. And, you know, I'm not saying like that could be toxic too. Like, you don't necessarily need to suffer through everything. You can get help and, you know, you could be lifted by other people. But in this context of like a fish being yanked out of water by deception, which is essentially all fishing is, you're tricking an animal into its demise. It feels less, I don't know. It's never sat well with me. Again, despite the fact that the song is quite a great one.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I feel like often I go to the more depressing side. I actually made a note at one point later that I think for the first time I didn't read a Connor lyric as like as death, as just like wanting to die. And I guess it came a little sooner in the form of this. But yeah, I guess there are different ways of reading it, but that's also the fun part about this. And that we don't always necessarily have to agree on the finer details, even if ultimately like we know what he's saying and like we agree on the overall perspective of it. But yeah, it's interesting. It's like just those couple of lines, the kind of difference that we can see in there.
And not that I'm like a skilled person when it comes with listener engagement, but like, I don't know, I'm curious to see like people listening here, like, what did you make of those lines? You know, yeah. What interpretations did you bring to that? That would be interesting to explore.
For sure. Because I feel like definitely we could go on with any topic for another 10 minutes.
Oh, but yeah.
Like, we could probably go on specifically like on this piece, four lines for 10 minutes. But in that vein, let's say, unless you have any other things for big picture, why don't we cut ourselves off? Let's practice some self-control, which we do not have, and move into the next song.
Yeah, let's do it. All right. And so next up is Method Acting. And I kind of want to talk about this next track with the following track, which is False Advertising. Kind of, I feel like they're very complimentary songs, and we can go one at a time, but I feel like this is maybe like the second thesis of the album. So if the first one is like, let's explore, you know, what it means to exist in expanding horizon. Like, as you get older, you just understand that the world becomes a bigger and bigger place. And eventually it's just too much for your eyes to take in all at once. So where do you fit yourself in? I would say then that the next thesis is, now that you are trying to act in this bigger, larger world, how do you do it authentically? Can you do it authentically? And I think that method acting sort of blends those two things together, whereas false advertising is very much about like, how do I present the authentic self?
Right.
And so do you have any notes about, or anything you want to say about method acting?
Yeah, you know, I don't have too much on this one. It's not for lack of love of the song. This was actually, I think, one of the first standouts for me when I was going through Lifted, probably because of just like the energy on it. I just love it's just like hard, you know what I mean?
Oh,
yeah. It's a driving kind of track. And, you know, I think what he talks about here, it's kind of the future breeding some anxiety. He's looking for answers, looking for a purpose. But his self-expression through his music is kind of what quells that to some degree. But I think he also kind of talks a little bit about the longitude of humanity, the kind of inevitable rise and fall of civilizations, when he talks about a language learned is forgotten, turned and studied once again. And I kind of think when he's talking about talking to Mike about keeping the tapes rolling, it's kind of like he wants to put his stamp in history. And maybe, you know, maybe 18 years from the album's release, two people will dig it back up and kind of, you know, this forgotten relic of the past and talk about their thoughts. So I find that kind of interesting. But the last thing I'll say too is, later half of the song, I see, and this is what I was talking about before. Like, you can definitely read death in here for sure, but I think this death is more akin to that transformation, almost like Casadega intro. And just because you get the death card doesn't mean death dying. It means transformation. And in Big Picture, he talks about returning to the town where he was born. Here, he kind of says a similar thing about returning to that which gave birth to him. But I think what he's saying is he's going to go home. He's going to experience this rebirth. And afterwards, his story continues. Which, for the first time, I didn't talk about killing him. So, round of applause.
Gold star.
Gold star.
Yeah. Scratch and sniff, right. Grape sticker. It says, you did a great job.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was method acting for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much more to add to what you said, because that was beautifully summed up. And I think it's definitely one tally in your book for... the lifted as being more of a transformation, more as a positive thing, because you have that.
Oh, that would be a note in your book.
I don't know. I'm gonna give it to you because you had the more positive spin. I think I do like the line about like that sort of meta textual, like Michael keep the tapes rolling. And the fact that, like, there's that line, all I know is I feel better when I sing.
Yeah.
And you can kind of look at, art as past copies of yourself, right? Like, you know, whether it's something as big as an album, or if you go back and if you kept journals or diaries or something and you read who that person was, like, that person technically doesn't exist anymore, right? So, like, can that person be said to still be alive, or have they passed? They didn't really die, but they transformed into something else. You look at your 10-year-old diary, like, that person's still technically you. But, you know, we go through huge transformations. If your 10-year-old self saw you grown up, maybe they would recognize who they saw. But probably they would scratch their heads and wonder, like, how did we get here?
Cry,
weep, run for
how many good years do I have left, old man?
Oh god, or the reverse, like I pin the little fucker against the wall with like a broken bottle up to his neck. You better not fuck this up, dude. You got one chance. Which,
anyways, so false advertising.
So. That was really just my way of saying, give me all your pity and your money.
Yeah. All of it.
Oh, I love that line.
On Patreon. So false advertising. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty on the nose as far as songs go. I'm going to keep rolling with this. So, it's another song about Connor's conflicted feelings with fame, and definitely the way that he presents himself. And I think maybe a little bit of that parasocial, like, I know this man, I know Connor Oberst, he would never do this, he would never say that, because you know the Connor that exists in his writing and the persona that exists in the band. But as he says, you know, fuck my face, fuck my name, they're brief and false advertisements. And to keep going, that for a soul I don't have as well. And I think kind of what he's saying here is that if you just look at the surface level, if you just look at the evidence at your disposal, okay, yeah, you can put that together, but don't forget these aren't real. These are maybe parts of me that I'm expressing, but this isn't the true self that exists.
Yeah, and it definitely goes back to the, like, that idea of, like, this album, this song, this version of Connor created in Lifted is brief and false, in a sense.
Right.
And I think, so then can we say, like, does the air quotes, big air quotes here, does the real Connor pop up in the... But I found in a song and the people I love, they will lift me up out of darkness. Like, is that supposed to signal to us that that is something genuine?
Because like the but is almost like, yes, this is brief, this is false, and this thing doesn't have my soul. It's just a record. But, you know, opening up my doors, letting everyone in, we're going to drink, we're going to have fun, we're going to, you know, I'm going to be with the people I love. Like, I don't know, is that then an assertion that there is something real here? Because it seems weird that you would point out, like, oh, this is all fake, this is all fake. But this is all real, too.
Yeah, right. I hear what you're saying. I think, for me, that sounds a little bit more like this self-discovery, because this is another piece I get into later for some of the songs. But maybe it's a little bit of him saying, like, this is how I found my true self. This is, like, it's in these other people. It's this connection to humanity, the people that I love and the people that love me. So maybe he's kind of getting to, like, I have lacked a soul in a sense, but I'm finding it here with these people.
I see that. I could feel that. I mean, I don't have, like I said, this was more like, I felt like this paired really nicely with method acting, just because it has those similar, like, you know, showing the authentic self. What person you were in the past, or like how you had presented yourself, or like how your art stands in for you. I feel like those are sort of overlapping ideas between the two. I don't really have too much more to say about this unless you have any other notes.
No, yeah, that was pretty much it. Just a couple of notes about those songs, but I'm ready to talk about the next one. All right, Jesse. So
you will
die tomorrow. Okay, no, that's great. You have two choices. You can either struggle in the water. Okay.
I've got the picture of Patrick with all the hooks in his mouth.
So the first thing I want to mention about this song is, if you go by the Genius lyrics, there are a couple of errors. So firstly, there are no quotations listed anywhere in the lyric liner, at least on the remastered vinyl. I'm going to assume the same is true for like the original release. So for example, there are quotation marks when he says later in the song, you said, go explore those other women, the geography of their bodies, et cetera, et cetera. There are no quotes at any point in the actual lyrics. Lyric book, I guess you could call it. So I think that adds some ambiguity, because I already did have a little bit of ambiguity at whose point of view some of the pieces of this are being sung. And then the other part is the "you will" part follows the pattern in the song title. It's not "you will, you will, you will." It's "you" as a question, "will" as a statement. So I wanted to throw that off at the start there, because I think that might potentially change the way a couple of people maybe read or hear the song. And I think it's important to have a little bit of that accuracy as we kind of talk about it.
Thank you for those for that clarification. I mean, I don't for the life of me understand why we have access to like album inserts and yet there are still incorrect lyrics online. I don't mean to like, listen, if somebody is like on a Genius and they're like, they got their account and they're doing like, you know, the good Lord's work, you know, typing in the Connor lyrics, like, thanks for the effort. But like, you could just take the dust jacket and just transcribe what is written on dust jacket. Like, but like to jump off your first point, I'm glad that you found ambiguity here, because I was a little worried that like that I was going to embarrass myself by saying like there are so many pronouns in the song.
Yes,
that, like the first like not like for this listen, but like for the first couple of times that I've listened to the song, which this is maybe one of, if not my favorite, one of my favorite songs of the album, I had a really hard time deciding whether he was speaking from the point of view of the other person or it was him paraphrasing what the other person is saying. And yeah. I could never get the story. Like, reading it on paper definitely helps, but like listening to it, I'm just like, who is saying what about whom?
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I that literally one of my notes is like, lyrically it's confusing. So I'm really willing to admit if I'm reading some of it incorrectly. But like, so like seemingly she's telling Connor that he'll return to her before constantly questioning him, I think. Like, you will, as if she's questioning him, like, you. And Connor's like, I will, but you are like, Connor, you? And he's like, I will. Like, I don't know, but maybe that ambiguity adds some charm to it, as it doesn't necessarily need to follow some kind of preordained idea of how this like relationship is and how it will work. Like, who, and the last verse, like, whose position is that from?
Yeah. Oh man. Like, and just you saying that too is like kind of putting the idea in my head of like that ambiguity or that confusion, like with all the like the I you pronouns flying around and making things confusing. Like, you used the term like this prescribed way of like how this is all going to work out. Like, oh yeah, you're going to do this, and then like that confirmation, like, yes, this is how it's going to work out. Mm-hmm. And I love that line. That last stanza is just beautiful. Like, if, yeah. Then this book's all lies, and my plans would all be ruined. And if you don't, I'll start drinking like the way I drank before. And it's just like, it's if we're going to take the, I guess, the easiest surface level read of this is a partner who is saying like, yeah, sure, go screw around with other girls. You're going to find that they're all the same, you know, besides like different shapes and such, we're all women and you're going to come back to me. And then all of a sudden by the end of the song, it's just like, oh, I have no confidence that you'll ever come back to me. But then again, if we add the whole mix of, well, we don't really know who is saying what, who is truly upset by this, or mm-hmm. is it mutual? Are we supposed yeah. to be confused by the end? And it's just like, oh, well, these people actually just had like a horrible they didn't learn anything from Fevers and Mirrors or Letting Off the Happiness, and there was no communication made. Yeah. And you're in a terrible relationship again. Come on, Connor, get your shit together.
Well, I actually, you know, I wonder if this is like the same relationship on Messenger Bird song, right?
Interesting.
You know, because we kind of talked about how it seemingly felt like both were using the other in some sense, that there was maybe some underlying passion there, but ultimately they couldn't work it out, right? Like, the way she used him, the way he used her, and ultimately it just like created this pretty flawed relationship. But I think in this one, the way that I read it, I kind of feel for the subject of the song, the person that Connor is singing about. I kind of see it in that second verse where she kind of says she doesn't mind, you know, Connor, you can forget me every morning, but it's fine because I know at night you'll come back to me. She's a reoccurring dream, but that almost kind of feels like a resignation to maybe someone who doesn't feel the same way, that maybe at the end of the day, Connor comes back to this, like the safety of the warm bed, but why is it okay that he should forget her every morning just to remember her at night? It's almost it's almost like a kind of like a booty call type thing. And you know, that can be fair and fine if everyone's on the same page, but if one of them's catching feelings, that's where obviously some extra layers of complexity come in. And I just want to say real quick, I'll let you jump in. I'm not saying this like, damn Connor, he's such a bad person, how dare he do this? Like, obviously this is imperfect, and I'm, you know, just like giving some reading based off of some evidence, or you know, not making any sweeping grand statements about any of the people involved.
Oh, right. And I guess we should do our patented, like, when I made that joke of like, oh, Connor, get your shit together. Like, I'm talking about the character. I'm not talking about the human flesh and blood being.
Right. False advertising. Right.
Right. This is, right. The carbon copy Connor left behind that we can, you know, rag on and just, you know, diss him in his own home, in his own basement. It's wild.
Kind of messed up.
Yeah. But, you know, squatters' rights, man. So I thought it was interesting, your interpretation. And I guess, again, this is where the maybe confusing lyrics are giving us different views. But you said you'd be my dream. I always interpreted that as Connor is saying that this partner, this woman, is saying that he would be her dream every night. Are we saying the same thing? Or, like, I think you were saying that, like, she would, like, kind of come and go. She would come and go.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
And my initial interpretation is that, like, she would call and dismiss him. Like, she was more of the steady figure in this relationship, as opposed to what you're saying, which is he's sort of the constant and she's the one coming in and out.
Well, so here's where maybe the extra layer of confusion comes in. She's coming and going in the way that I'm reading it. She is the recurring dream, but coming another layer down, I guess, outside of the metaphor, how I hear that is in the morning, Connor fucks off. He leaves. He lives his life. He forgets her. At night, whenever he's feeling a little, you know, feeling some type of way, he comes back.
Why did you have to say it that way?
I don't know, man. I don't even know how I want to say this, but basically,
coming to her like a dog with a bird at her door,
like a booty call. Like, I'm gonna reset. So what I see when I said, you know, you'd be my dream, I could have you every night if by morning I've forgotten you. Yes, she is the dream that Connor is having that comes and goes. But in my head, what I see is she's chilling at her place and Connor gets to have her whenever is convenient for him. And that's every night. And doesn't matter what's happening in the days because he's not willing to commit to that. But at nighttime, and we all know the implication there, he comes back because she's a dream and you only dream at night. It's very confusing, but I guess, does that make it more clear kind of the standpoint I'm coming from?
No. You're absolutely making yourself clear and you're making a good – totally. I completely get that read of it. I think what's confusing for me is I kind of do wish like what you're saying is there's no quotations used at all in the lyrics of the song. Yeah. That actually might help as far as like, when is the, like, I'm saying, you're saying, like, when does that stop? And when is it his own voice? Cause like, is the line, you never really leave my mind. The way that I interpreted the song, and maybe it was just always because I did have a Messenger Bird song, like as kind of thrumming in the background as I'm thinking of this, because I'm definitely getting the, like, you know, kind of frustrated person upset with, like, having to calm somebody down and somebody constantly, like, coming and going and that sort of thing. In this song, I had always pictured the person that he's talking to as the one in control. And sort of, like, more of the kind of, like, that domineering presence that we get in Fevers and Mirrors. Whereas, I mean, yeah, you're making a really good case, and now I'm seeing the song completely differently. But I always interpreted this as like, oh, I've got you under my thumb. You're always going to come back to me because, like, you know, I'm in power in this relationship. Like, I can have you every night, and I know you're going to come back to me every night. And then by the end of the song, like, that confidence, that bravado is gone.
Okay, yeah.
But no, again, we're coming away with such different stories. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I think that's, although I read things kind of similarly, right? What's lacking in the way that I see it is that power of this, like, she has this power over Connor that, do whatever you want because I know that I own you. And I see it as the opposite, that Connor's the one with the power and she cares about him so much that no matter all the other shit that he's doing when they're not together, she's willing to forgive it all because at least at the end of the day, he comes back home to her. And so he's the one with the power there because he can lie, cheat, steal, whatever during the day. But at least when he comes back home, you know, that there she's happy because he's there. So, yeah, although like we have like the people in the same position in terms of like who's coming, who's going, I think ultimately we come out with the same idea. It's just like who is the one with said power.
Right. And I'm actually curious, too, like if we're alone here, like did anybody else feel this sort of like overwhelmed with I don't know. I can't think of really any other song where I've been this sort of turned around by like not knowing who is saying what about whom. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. And even like I get what you're saying. And then as I'm like, I have the lyrics open in front of me and I'm like, I still am getting tripped up sometimes. But like, okay, so regardless, I don't have much more to say about the song except that I love this song so much because there is just something so, so, so satisfying about that you will part where like it's this slow, slow build to just like an absolute banger by the end of it. And I'm always here for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear that for sure. Yeah, I think just in summary, like it's two people that seem to have this deep caring for each other that just like Messenger Bird's song, a lack of communication has doomed them as much as it seems like they do have that shared love for each other. It's just not manifesting in a healthy way for both of them. Is that kind of a fair way to see like that you're seeing it as well?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Okay. Yeah.
It totally goes back to, you know, communication in relationships is key.
Yeah. I just wanted to, you know, put a little bow on it because as confused as we are, you know, it'd be good to have a little summary, a little note at the end. Yeah. So I guess then with that, why don't we transition into Lover I Don't Have to Love?
Yeah.
So I don't have too much to say here, which it seems a little like I feel a little bad about that because this is just like for me, like one of the all time greats. I'm going to get on my high horse for a second though. All right.
Okay.
Don't be a gatekeeper. This is my PSA. If you are someone who dislikes this song for any various reasons, that's totally cool. If you dislike the fact that Lover I Don't Have to Love made the top 10 list on Best Bright Eyes songs, and you're like, oh, these fake people, you go sit in a corner and go listen to your MP3 player by yourself, all right?
take a time out, listen to a couple of tracks, calm down, and when you got your big people pants back on, you can come back to the table, okay?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm making maybe bigger issue out of it than it probably is, but like I don't like the hate that it gets and the like eye roll of like, well, they're real fans and they're the fake fans. And the fake fans are the ones that like Lover I Don't Have to Love and First Day of My Life. It's like, yeah, all right, let's settle down with the gatekeeping here. And if you feel called out, maybe do some reflection on why that is. Because I didn't call anyone specifically out, all right?
Yeah, so we told you what to do. You go to the corner, you chill out, you get your big people pants back on, and then you come back.
And again, you can dislike it for any various reasons. It's a more like electronic track, which is something new, I'd say, for Bright Eyes at this point. Obviously, Digital Ash, we get a lot more of that. So it's a change in Bright Eyes style. And I know people that aren't a fan of Digital Ash and that type of Bright Eyes. So I think there are fair criticisms of the song. I don't think it's fair to criticize other people over what they like. So that's my main point, actually, with Lover I Don't Have to Love. But ultimately, I think this song is just like sad boy Connor to a T. You know, I miss whoever the subject of the last song is. Like, I miss them. I'm lonely. I'm on tour. And I'm going to fuck a stranger to make myself feel better. And I'm going to get high to make myself feel better, at least for tonight. That's it. That's the tweet.
No, I get that. And I think, like, one of the things that this is one of those songs that makes me think that this is a bigger world now, because, like, up until this point, like, if you're talking about in previous Bright Eyes albums, if you're talking about, like, hooking up or getting high, I'm always envisioning, like, some drunken teenage party, you know, at a friend's house or at your house or in the basement or an attic. And now we're just getting this larger world where it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to clubs now. I'm hitting on strangers. I'm going home with someone else, and, you know, fuck it. I'll figure out, you know, how I'm going to get back to the band tomorrow. I don't even know where the fucking car is. Like, it does feel bigger. Mm-hmm. And I want to plus what you said before. Like, I don't like gatekeeping of any sort, to be honest. And I think that was important for you to say, because, you know, imagine not feeling welcome in any space because you like or dislike a thing.
Right.
There are mature ways that you can express liking and disliking a thing. That's fine. But then don't be a knob and, you know, and just dunk on somebody for not liking the thing you like.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or liking the thing you don't like. I don't know, whichever.
For sure. And yeah, it, very small percentage. This isn't like some epic call out of the culture of Bright Eyes fans or anything like that. Like,
we're looking at you, O boards.
Yeah, right. No, it's nothing like that. It's a very, like, you know, but there are those people that exist in every fandom. And because our platform is the fandom of Bright Eyes and Conor Oberst music, you know, it's nice to be able to at least, like, mention stuff like that. It applies to all things, not just Lover I Don't Have to Love and Bright Eyes, of course.
All right, so Bowl of Oranges up next. And I'm going to take a second. I'm going to get up on my soapbox now, all right? And I'm going to say it's very okay for you to ostracize and alienate anybody from this fandom for... Jokes.
When you said I'm gonna get up on my soapbox, I was like, this sounds suspiciously like what I just said. And then of course.
Yeah, that's me. I'm a stinker, ain't I?
That's beautiful. Well, speaking of beautiful, Bowl of Oranges, huh?
Mm.
It is beautiful, man. The narrative, it's a narrative song, you know. I know that it is told a lot from Connor's perspective, but I do kind of see it as this, again, him penning his observations and the things that he's learning and the things that he's learning through other people. I'm going to let you jump in, but I obviously have more to say than that.
No, so I do. So I'm kind of conflicted about the song because I 100% agree with you that I think.
Oh, and you're conflicted because we actually agree on something so far in the show.
Let's not get too optimistic about that yet.
Yeah, right.
No, I think it's a beautifully written song, and I think that it is just such. It's very positive, and it takes some of that imagery of, like. I think we'd see the beauty and stance, and we'd stand staring in awe. And it kind of is a more positive spin on the big picture, where it's like originally that is framed as like, oh, you can't see it all at once; it's overwhelming. To now seeing life as a picture of something arresting. Something that's just going to stop you in your tracks and make you marvel at its beauty. And the little vignettes that are told throughout the song, I think, do just that. The only thing, and this isn't necessarily a criticism of this song, but maybe the one that follows, is that the the song is almost like a little too peppy and upbeat, a little too saccharine, if that makes any kind of sense. Okay. Like,
yeah,
it's super, super peppy. And then then the next song kind of just punches you in the jaw because it's very incongruous with this one. But I mean, it's like, yeah, it's not like silly. I don't think it would go so far as to be silly. It's just like, it does feel like maybe the peppiest upbeat song we've heard from Bright Eyes so far. Like, as far as just purely, I don't know. I think this might be the most positive song we've heard.
Yeah, probably. But I think this is also, too, you know, this is the kind of positive album in a sense.
Mm.
And, you know, because I think he's starting to come to terms with how important being a human is in a sense, like of humanity, of how connection is vital to our experience, the social and you know, to love or to be loved. So, you know, so wherever that's coming from and how we can help and affect each other, strangers and best friends. It's like this is the day of his awakening that he talks about on Big Picture as well. And kind of when everything started to feel brand new, as he says in the song. I think the lyric about the doctor is especially powerful too, because it does kind of shy away from the idea of the cure to everything is a medication, right? Of like, there is pure objective science behind everything. But you can't rationalize emotion. You can't rationalize love and spirituality. And, you know, this is obviously broader spirituality, not tied to any specific like faith or religion or anything like that. So the fact that he can heal this doctor's pain, he says, you can just heal yourself. He's like, no, I can't. You know, there are some things that medicine cannot cure, that science cannot cure. And it's ultimately this person to person, this human to human that we need, that we do need to cry. You do need to suffer in that sense. I could go on for a little bit longer, but I'm gonna, if you have anything, I have a spiel about existentialism again. Ooh.
Ooh, all right. So I'm gonna be quick because I did want to speak about those exact lines that you had just mentioned, but
yeah,
I had a different interpretation of them, which is a recurring theme. So I mean, similar along your lines, that we need each other. You need other people. And like, even if you look at this doctor less of like someone who can prescribe medication, it's like, if you're a therapist, you can't just talk to yourself in the mirror. Like, you can. Anyone can do that. But like, that's not helping. You need to actually like be with another person. And so that line of like, there's nothing I can do for you, you can't do for yourself. It's like, yeah, but I can't. That's the whole point. Like, sometimes yeah, you need the other person to do that for you. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you too, and I do sense where the bridge might be going for this and an existential discussion. But yes, like, sometimes you don't need to drown your problem with a medication. Sometimes it does just take like working through it with people there to support you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can't, you know, put yourself through therapy alone. You need to talk to someone. You need someone's hand to hold, whether it's literal or figurative.
Yeah, exactly. And again, it doesn't necessarily even need to be therapy, right? It could just be a friend. It could be someone to listen and that sort of thing too, for sure. So yeah, to kind of jump into this existentialism aspect again, you know, within the doctor story, but then also, you know, in the later lines too, loneliness is a big theme that comes into it. That's how I learned the lesson that everyone's alone. And in existential theory, and I guess where I learned it from existential therapy, Irvin Yalom he's the guy, right? He's one of the guys. That's the best way I could put it. And he's got four givens of the human experience as it relates to this existential theory, one of which being isolation or aloneness,
which is coming to play on this song. Death and inevitability, you know, these are inevitabilities of life. So death, another one that we discussed already. Meaning or meaninglessness, which again, like we've been kind of talking about in a way of Connor trying to find his meaning through this, as well as freedom, which again was another point that talked about. So I know I'm getting a little off the track of Bowl of Oranges specifically, but this is kind of where, when I was writing these notes, that whole existential idea of the album came together, because as I started piecing it together, I was like, wait a second, we did kind of talk about freedom. We did talk about kind of that choice between life and death, of struggle, of and now we're getting to that isolation piece, and how is Connor trying to find meaning and find himself, which is the larger topic of the album, and I guess a piece that I'll get to later. So I think for me, as kind of lighthearted as Bowl of Oranges is, this was really the song that kind of spurred and furthered my understanding of the album as a whole. Just aside from the fact that it is just such an amazing song, I think. I know, like, kind of like what you're saying, I don't want to say out of place, because those aren't the words that you used, but it is very different from what we've heard from Bright Eyes. And although the sound, almost like I don't know when, but it is going to come, is a sound that is maybe a little out of place on Lifted, it's kind of interesting how these two are juxtaposed given that. So yeah, I mean, again, despite the fact that kind of went off the trail a little bit there, like, I think for me, Bowl of Oranges is really an important song, at least lyrically, a staple of this album in terms of how I ended up making sense of the entire thing.
I get that. And I think it is important that it is this, as you say, it's an overall very positive album, which is in many ways a departure from albums we've listened to before. But it is important that we get these important beats and this important, like, connecting thread for the whole album in such a positive song. So I get that. I completely understand that. But of course, with all light comes shadow. So I guess should we get to the next track?
Yeah, let's do it. Don't know when, but a day's gonna come. So we already kind of talked about this one a little bit, and I feel like we gave it a bad rap, right? Like, I'd say if you came into this podcast, this episode, like, not fully grasping Lifted, you might get the sense that, like, ugh, this song, and this is the song they were kind of iffy about. I think we gave it a little bit of a rough go of things. But at the same time, I think our point does still hold true. It does seem out of place for the album, but at the same time, I still love that angry rant, this finger pointing that you kind of get on this song, for sure.
The more that I think about it, this kind of feels like it would be more at home somewhere in Casadega. I don't know whether you agree with me on that or not.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
There's enough of the, like, there's something kind of apocalyptic about this. There's something very esoteric about, like, the imagery that he draws in this song, especially the lines about, like, you know, the everything going black and there no longer being a sun or a moon or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Feels very, like, cosmic and esoteric. It's very esoteric. And I feel like that, like, ooh, I can't wait to dig into Casadega. Different story, different time. But I feel like this would be at home there. And yeah, I do like the rantiness of it, which, I mean, kind of foreshadows Let's Not Shit Ourselves in in rantiness, I guess. But yeah, it's so sonically strange, especially back to back. I mean, I did make the joke before, like, you know, shadows and light and all that kind of stuff. But, like, hey, this is really a jarring switch, especially since, like, we definitely kind of get eased back into something more positive sounding when it comes to the next song. But this one, yeah, just kind of sticks out to me.
I guess the first thing I want to mention about this song is the lyric added to the remastered version, which is funny because it's not even printed on the vinyl, like on the lyrics on the vinyl, because I'm assuming they included it, but they just kept all the original stuff from the first release. So the lyric is, it's hard to ignore all the news reports. They say we must defend ourselves, fight on foreign soil against the infidels with the oil wells. God saves gas prices, which is obviously a political statement. Connor was very anti-Bush at this time as well. Re-president talks to God. I could see why they removed it, because not much else on the album is so outwardly political. That it could sort of feel a little out of place, despite the fact that this song kind of gets into some of that. We're in with Purple Hearts, carried silver guns, they'll kill a man for what his father's done. Again, a very political statement. So it's a little interesting about specifically why they removed that. But again, if you're going to look at Genius or something like that for the lyrics, you're not going to see this lyric in there, but you'll hear it on the remastered version of the song.
Yeah, I think I am listening to an older version of it because I don't recall hearing that. But yeah, definitely the line about soldiers with purple hearts, like, that jumped out at me immediately. Like, oof, we are in 2002 for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. We're kind of still there in 2020, yeah, in a sense.
In a weird way. We just shuffled some numbers around.
Yeah, right. Oh, God, it's 2021.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. But if other songs are about, like, the relief from the pit and that proverbial climb from the wild animals, from their grasp, I think this is the song you sing when you're contemplating, is the climb worth it? You know, like, yeah. You're by the campfire. It's starting to go cold. You're low on rations, and I'm gonna paint a nightmarish scene. It's like a cartoon where you see the eyes start to glow in the bushes. This is maybe the choice that you make. Are you gonna struggle? Are you going to make the effort to climb up, or are you going to resign yourself to being eaten? I think the best way I found to phrase it in my notes is that this song is exasperation.
Yeah, I see that. Just like a general frustration. There is that theme of defeat that I'm picking up here, that you're saying, like, or at least like you're being brought to defeat, not necessarily that you are defeated. Like, there's the kind of those infantilizing lines about how he got sent to his room and sat down and had a talking to. Like, those are pretty general, you know, we've all been, I guess, in that position where, you know, you were reprimanded, or like an authority figure had to, like, kind of put you in line or something like that.
Not me. I was a good boy.
Yeah, of course. We were little angels.
That's how we turned out like this.
Yeah, exactly. Remember, kids, be bad when you're young, or you'll end up a couple of losers on a podcast. Don't worry, cut that, Chris. I get the idea of, you know, frustration at maybe an inability to change things on a great scale. I don't know. I mean, I had grand ideas of talking about that really interesting line of questioning whether, like, Christ died for our sins. And then questioning, like, well, maybe Judah was the smart one and he actually got something out of the deal. Which was, you know, I don't know what to make of that line exactly. And if I sold my soul for a bag of gold, I mean, even though it was like pieces of silver for ratting out Jesus in the Bible, like, you know, well, if I gave you something that I have no material proof exists and in return, I gained material wealth. Can you call me an idiot?
Right.
And I mean, that goes back to some previous things that we've talked about with other albums where there's this disdain of, but jealousy for people with religious slants. Like, we've talked about how, you know, there is this bitterness that, like, you know, I don't have the same belief that some other folks do, while at the same time kind of looking down at it. And I think that that's kind of a callback here in these interesting lines about, you know, that very overtly religious criticism right there.
And I think, I might have another one of those in the future as well. Not yet, but down the road. Another kind of, again, that same trope, I guess you could say, that we find in his music. But I guess with that being said, though, that's my favorite segue. Would you like to inch closer to this future world where I reveal my secrets?
Yeah.
It was very half-hearted. You're just like, yeah.
Yeah.
So nothing gets crossed out. The first thing I wrote down was, this one hurts, man. Like, just getting called out in the first 10 seconds of the song. You know, like, I just want someone to walk in front and I'll follow the leader. Like, oh boy. Like, this was definitely like one of my high school songs. And I am proud to say that I am still the maladapted child that I was then. Oh boy.
It's like, it's Chris, when I listen to you talk, it's like I'm looking into a mirror.
So at this point, when I was going through this song, I started kind of wondering, was Big Picture kind of a setup like Spindle Fever Darkness Necklace was? Because Connor talks about predetermination, talks about like the carousel of pictures as well, which mirrors that swirling stream that he talks about in Big Picture. So it almost does make me think that Connor is maybe singing to himself or the broader category of people like him on that opener. But for me, this song is another one of conflict rather than maybe the exasperationless one. This is kind of that just depressed resignation to the will of the world. I'm a corpse, just drag me along through until I get to this finish line that someone has determined for me. I hate to sound like such a bummer, but you know what? I haven't done it all episode. Give me this one. You know, let me have this. Like, you're too tired to manage your own life. So you just hope that there is some invisible hand that will place you where you are meant to be. And this is, again, the contradiction of the freedom that you have from that existential point of view. And that you're just willing to submit yourself to the idea of predetermination, even if you don't really fully believe it deep down. You just don't have the energy to fight back against it. So even though the message of the album contradicts it, it doesn't make it like an invalid feeling of hopelessness. I think it's good to have this reflection because it's showing the development of where Connor is and where he wants to be, or where he was and where he is now, depending on where this is taking place in the transformation. So I know the question still remains of like, how do you get out of it? How do you get out of the pit? But, you know, I don't know, maybe for Connor, it is the music. It is the connections he's making with others, as we hear alluded to on other tracks. So that's nothing gets crossed out. Cross that one out.
I mean, I'm just going to add in that I think that this is an interesting song because I think it does encapsulate that transformation in that. Yeah, I think it starts definitely from that the place where you're saying, like, I'm just tired. Life has me beaten down and I really just want, you know,
I just want to be like drift along with wherever this is going, and not do that like existential work of like creating meaning for myself. I just want to be pulled along. But I do get that callback from Bowl of Oranges. So when I'm lost in a crowd, I hope you'll pick me out. Now I wait for a hand to lift me up, help me stand. And it's not, you know, there is something positive in that he's waiting for that, as you say, that like that community or that person or that connection to, you know, to be that person or, you know, that support when
that connection.
Exactly. That you can't, you know, we don't have to stand tall by ourselves all the time. You can lean on someone. And I've always loved that last part of the song where I think that's what a lot of people hope for. Like, I want to find that person who's going to pick me out of a crowd, mm-hmm. who will just know me from, you know, I'm taking the lyric literally, of course, but like, you know, there is something nice to feel special for being picked out of a crowd. I don't know. I like it. Let's put that on the
glowing marks. Put that on the pitchfork.
We need to like Photoshop like a little sticker and put it on, like go get a CD and like stick it. I don't know. I like it.
I like it.
Jesse from the hit podcast, Connor Spathman.
Well, why don't you take us through Make War then?
All right. So Make War is the next one up. And the only reason I want to talk about this was because I would never have expected me to like the song as much as I do. It is a really atmospheric song, if that makes any kind of sense. I love the way it starts. It like it's almost like you're listening to like an old scratchy vinyl. And it is, as a person who I'm very sorry for everybody here who is a red-blooded American and they love their country music, I have to say I am really not a fan of country music. But there, I don't know, there's something, I like the fact that they're like towing the line of country in the song, and I just find it pleasant.
Very I'm Wide Awake It's Morning in that sense of like folky.
Oh yeah, like
folk type music.
Super leaning into that folkiness. And I do like these like long form songs. I do like Let's Not Shit Ourselves. And I find that Make War is among that sort of like long epic song. And I don't know. I don't have too much specifically to say about it. I just think that the story is interesting because it's a weird like resignation to the ending of a relationship, but also kind of like a weird last word on it. You know, like there is that, like, I've always liked that, the line about, standing like on a pile of all your possessions.
Mm-hmm.
And that made the speaker feel closer to the ex-partner than, I don't know, like that's to me, like, I don't know, kind of sad.
See,
you know,
and maybe this will make you kind of see something different, but I think this is the end of the relationship from Messenger Bird song and You Will.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of what I see. And I think for me, this is Connor coming to the realization that they're messed up, kind of complicated, poor communicative relationship is ultimately just doomed. As sad as that may be, it just, you know, it is what it is, kind of thing.
And I'm curious about what you think of the oh goodness, I'm not a music person. Is this a chorus? So hurry up and run, like those stanzas, is that technically the chorus, or am I showing how awful at music I am?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't really matter, I'd say.
That makes me feel better.
Yeah, honestly, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I'm pretty sure that it follows kind of the same pattern as return to the person that you were. So hurry up and run to the one that you love. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a, yeah, we'll say yeah.
For want of a better term, like those stanzas that follow that pattern, like I am torn between like, I don't know. I've always found those to be interesting lines. He'll make world war on who you were before and claim all that has spoiled in your heart.
Yeah.
Which is like a pun on like to the victor goes the spoils. But it's like, it's this weird backhanded compliment of like,
yeah.
Blind him with your kindness and he will then become your prisoner like I once was. And he gets all that has gone rotten with you. Like, yeah. I don't know what to make of this. It reeks of a bad breakup. Like,
yeah,
you're great. I love you, but fuck you. Like
it's like a barbed well wish, yeah, you know, yeah. Like,
wow,
implying like there is something that this new person will need to cure about you. I honestly, I do think it's a continuation of the same story, you know, and Connor kind of just sort of wishing she would be someone else or that they could return to who they were, right? And it kind of like on You Will when he talks about their childhood, you know, we were just kids when I first kissed you in the attic of my parents' house, where when things were simple, but ultimately they're not now and they're not who they fell in love with anymore. But yeah, it is absolutely just such a pointed, jagged song. And it's so like, you don't notice it at first blush at all.
It does start very, I would say, passionlessly. Like, I loved those opening lines. Our love is dead but without limit, like the surface of the moon. And it's like, you're almost being prepped for, like, that's kind of weird and indifferent. but then it's just like, oh, and now let me go on a diatribe about why this relationship is falling apart and, you know, give you a bunch of backhanded compliments. I wish you the best and oof, good luck to the next person who's got to deal with you. Like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely an interesting song. Like I could see like why specifically you wanted to talk about it.
Yeah. I just, I honestly would not have seen myself. This is one of those songs that actually I would skip over when I first encountered this album. You know, like, I don't know, just maybe because I was averse to country. And as soon as I heard like those sort of like, I don't know if twangy is the right word, but like the twangy opening lines. But later on, I just like, yeah, I'll specifically go to this album for this song. So yeah, I just wanted an excuse just to chat about it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, why don't we get into the next song? Because I feel like this has a special place almost in the Bright Eyes canon, or maybe I'm just making it up in my head. So this is like quintessential sad Bright Eyes. Like this is, look, I'm just going to put it out there. If you haven't thought about yourself as the subject of the song at least once, can you really even call yourself a fan? That's gatekeeping right there. I'm kidding, of course.
That's the only gatekeeping we accept.
Yes, when you make yourself to be the sad, pathetic, lonely human being in the song itself.
If you've never felt personally called out by Connor Oberst himself through his lyrics, then I don't know what to do with you.
Yeah, I think it's kind of neat in the way that it tells stories about other people. You know, some are personal for Connor and some aren't. I think, again, it does kind of talk back to that existential nature of the album, that searching for meaning and freedom of will. I mean, case in point, right? The divorcee, and she literally says she's free to waste away alone. Like, that's her choice. She doesn't have to fold his shirts or look her best anymore. So I think you get some of that already in the song. And despite the fact that it is such a downer of a song, I think that there is still a lot of value in looking at it in terms of a, hey, we're all kind of fucked up in some way kind of thing. It's a consolation in a sense.
Yeah, I get that. I think that, I guess it's the, you know, we started joking about it, but I think you kind of can't help but feel yourself in those, like, these vignettes and feeling yeah. like that. Like imposter syndrome really plays a big role in a lot of this, where it's like you either need to fit a role or you're failing to fit a role, and then you feel like, you know, like a wretch, a waste yeah. of breath, of space, of time,
of paint, of tape as well. There's all the different things you're a waste of.
Yeah, you're wasting so much. Didn't you see the Al Gore movie? We can't waste paint and tape.
come on, everyone, let's go. All right. Again, I think we go back to Connor's discomfort with religion, but also his kind of wish that he could be a part of it. And I'm not making a statement here one way or another that religion is naive. So, like, don't misunderstand me. But I do think Connor is reflecting a desire to go back to the naivete of faith in religion, right? Because towards the end of the song, when he talks about going to the church and hearing all the beautiful voices blend together, he tries to join back in the choir, but he can't. His voice doesn't reach high enough. He doesn't feel like he belongs anymore. He doesn't feel like he fits. And that sucks, right? It's like when the glass shatters, you can't put it back together again. And the fact that he's already shattered his belief in religion and in faith in God, unfortunately, you know, it can't be repaired. And again, that kind of sucks. It's nice to have that to believe in. And again, I think it speaks back to Connor's wish that he could feel like he was a part of something larger than himself. But that's ultimately the search on the album, that maybe it doesn't have to be something organized. It doesn't have to be a religion. It can just be the humanity, the connection, and the spirituality of us as I don't know, people, as an earth. I don't know, as a species. That's the one.
And I don't think it's just religion that's the target of this disillusionment.
That's fair. Yeah,
I've always loved / you know, felt my heart being ripped out at the lines of the couple. And you know, I love their love, and I'm thankful that someone actually receives the prize that was promised by all those fairy tales that drugged us.
Yeah, that I'm just gonna say that's your favorite Bright Eyes line. I think you've referenced it about like 8 times. That's not a slight, but you've referenced it a lot throughout the podcast. And I'm like, yeah. Jesse loves that line.
I do love that line. Because it's kind of true just how much media and art in general just influences us, especially in the case of romance and love and like what that looks like. But then it's like, yeah, but you take such like a narrow understanding of love and relationships, and then you try to apply it to like life, which is messy and random and weird. You know, you get some people like in the song, you know, you get those people that it works and it's easy and good for them. And for the rest of us schmucks, it's not. And it's and it's hard. And so I can see the connection there between like religion and that idea of love, because like in a sense, both are propped up as being these perfect things. But then like reality, yeah, they don't live up to those expectations. And then you get like that disillusionment with religion. You get the disillusionment with love. And then you start feeling like, oh, fuck, I can't make this happen. I guess I'm doing something wrong. Am I wasting my time? Am I a waste of time?
Yeah.
For sure. And the last point I want to make about this song is one of the other main struggles I see in it, where he's kind of like reflecting on the state of the society about when he goes down to the train depot and watches the people. It's almost like he feels like he has the authority to claim that other people are living wrongly, right? Because like, but it's pure projection, and he stops himself short of doing that and reflects like, wait a second, maybe I feel like I'm living wrongly. And maybe that's why I don't think he explicitly says that part, but that's what I'm getting from it. You know, that, you know, maybe it is more me, a me thing. Maybe it's not them. So I think that reflection again marks maybe another turning point for Connor and his understanding of his own anxieties and how he wishes he could lead his life and how he's going to need to change from that. Again, maybe not offering the solution, but offering up his moment of clarity at the time.
That is something that I actually really like in songs too, where there is that kind of cut where like there's almost that insertion of like, hold on, wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm remembering, I forget the exact, but is that death really you? I forget what song that's from, but like, I do like that
something
sort of
vague, you something vague. Dumb, yeah. Bitch.
I know I'm not a, everybody you can collectively you've, I know you, everybody has their tomatoes prepped. You may begin throwing.
I accept my fate. I'm in the stocks
I
right
just
now.
Got extra
and
I'm, cause you know, that's my thing. That's my song. He wrote it for me.
I know you were his top patron on patreon.com/Connor Oberst, and he wrote you were the highest patron, the highest tier, and you got a song written about you
when I was 7 years old, and he wrote that song.
and Patreon was totally a thing that was happening on the internet.
Yeah, in 1999. Oh man. I that kind of sudden realization, and I think he does it very well, the way he puts it in his songs. He comes off very genuine and in a lot of his music, and I think too it comes back to that willingness to be vulnerable, to maybe put out a song like Make War where you kind of come off sounding like a little bit of an ass, but you know what, like that's him, you know, and he's willing to, right or wrong, good or bad, like he's willing to put that out there.
Oh yeah, and it totally goes back to that one of those major themes, which is that authenticity, mm-hmm. that presenting something real. Yeah, excellent point.
Well, after that is From a Balance Beam. So we kind of talked about this on our No Beginning to the Story EP discussion. So I don't really have too much different that I want to say on it, but I'll open the floor for you first if you do have anything.
I mean, I don't know if you'll agree with me, but...
No.
It's... Yeah, okay. All right, cool. So next up on our list is... No, I personally feel that this song feels, I don't know, weirdly out of place for the album. Not as out of place as Don't Know When, but it, I don't know, I feel like it worked better on the EP than it does here.
Huh.
And I'm not quite sure why that is, because it's not like, you know, Don't Know When is a very jarringly different song. But I don't know, just something... You know, sonically about From a Balance Beam, I don't, something about it just seems different from the other songs. Maybe it's just there's like a slightly different feel in the production of the song that doesn't quite fit in with the others. But then again, I liked Make War, and that's really wildly different because it's like got the whole framing device of being on a vinyl record, and it's like, I don't know, maybe I just.
I guess
this I don't know. Can you help me? I'm drowning.
I think it speaks to maybe like, maybe we need to take a step back a little bit and like
because at this point we're like, huh, does Bowl of Oranges totally fit? Does Don't Know When kind of fit? Does, you know, and maybe we do have to take a look at the big picture, and maybe this album doesn't have one coherent sound, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like, and I don't say that to like sound like a dick or anything like that, but as you say that, and I'm like kind of reflecting back, like, huh, maybe Lifted doesn't have a coherency that I think that it does. You know what I mean? And maybe it's more lyrically than sonically that it has it.
But just then my knees give under me, my head feels weak, and suddenly it's clear to see it's not them but me.
Yeah, obviously, you dumb. Yeah, I can't say that again. Anyway, yeah, no, but I mean, I would disagree just because this is my favorite song on the album, so
that's fair. I can't that's say completely fair.
Like everything else, notwithstanding, I would feel like it would fit just because I love it so much. But yeah, like, I mean, for me, not much change from my original reading. If anything, like, I think it secured a little bit more my kind of thoughts in the moment about the cut out my lover's tongue line. Because we were chatting about that, like, huh, I wonder what that means. It's kind of like a jarring closing. And the thing that I posited was like, maybe he's saying that he gets to have the final say. You know, he's going to cut out her tongue and he gets to write the narrative. And after hearing Make War, like, I don't know, it seems like a perfect fit. Like,
oh, that makes, yeah.
Like, I don't, it doesn't necessarily matter who was right, who was wrong. I've got the platform and I like singing, and you can let those secrets choke your neck. But I'm going to wear them on display with my beads of sweat on a string of my regrets, you know, just all the greatest hits. We're going back in time. So,
no,
sorry, go ahead.
No, no, I'm going to say, like, I'm going to revoke what I just said now, like bringing that into light. Like, this fits in perfectly because I think maybe that's the, yeah, you're right. That like clears up the whole confusion. Seeing the song in context now makes a lot more sense. Like that authentic self of, you know, like you're saying, you could write a song like Make War and, you know, come off as, you know, bit of a shithead. And, but it's like, you did it, you said it, and you cut out her tongue essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely I think an interesting way of kind of phrasing art as just being one-sided in a sense, like in general. It's so, how are you going to get other people's perspective in something that is inherently personal? You know, we can try, we can empathize, but ultimately, like, everything is tinged by your own lens. But then the other piece that I wanted to throw in there too, I do think that maybe he's saying that he is turning the corner, it no longer following the predetermined mess of like the shoulds and musts and the wrinkled map and this cracked compass, and kind of moving into trusting his own intuition with his path forward. And with those maps and everything like that, kind of just being instructions given from his family, from our culture, from maybe religions and things like that, that he is realizing maybe don't fit for him, don't fit the mold of the life that he wants to lead. And this is that search for meaning. Like, okay, I'm not going to follow the path that others have laid out in front of me. I'm going to find my own. And in finding your own path, you are creating meaning in a sense, which, you know, I broken record, existentialism, meaning, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, 100%. I think that very succinctly kind of ties what we were saying about the song when we looked at it in the EP. And now it's very appropriate place in throughout the rest of the album. Yeah. I think we got this one pretty well covered. Do we want to move on to the next one on our list?
We shall.
Listen, Jesse, it's the ones with the sorest throats who have done the most singing. Everybody, let's hear it. Come on. I hope you're singing it from home. Ready? La, 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 la. If you don't already know that song, you probably thought that was the most annoying thing you've ever heard.
There's also a great possibility that you've heard the song and still think that was the most annoying thing you've ever heard.
We're going to have to put a little warning. By the way, if you want to skip, just like in the intro, like skip these seconds.
Yeah. It'll be part of our trigger warning.
Yeah, right? Honestly, though, like that line, like that was MySpace material. That's like...
Oh, yeah.
That's your new Instagram bio.
That was your I am away message.
That's going to be your rib cage tattoo. You know what I mean? And it's like the perfect example of Connor's like simplest lyrics, I think, hitting the hardest for sure. Like, I know it is like very simple and whatever, and you can be a little whatever about it, but like, I don't know. I think that's such a beautiful way of saying something so, so basic, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's, I've always appreciated, you know, brevity is the soul of wit. Like, if you can say mm-hmm. something simply and honestly, like, I think that sometimes can best even, like, the most profound poetry. Although, I guess, in a way, then it becomes profound poetry. Because that's what I think that's what those lines constitute.
Agreed. Yeah, so I think Connor really paints a pretty dazzling picture of Laura and just like the scene he sets, you know, strolling through the greenery. I wept with your movements. Like, it is such a dramatic song, but I think that's really the only way you could really convey this. This is obviously someone that means a lot to Connor. I mean, do you want to go so far as to say it's the same person we've been talking about throughout the album? Maybe. He does seem resigned to understand some mistakes here, but I don't know if I could say like this is Laura is the girl from Make War, you know. But I guess my main point with this, I just want to like bring out some of the beauty in the lyrics. You know, Connor is trying to reason with Laura how special she is, but she's having trouble seeing herself in that same way. Almost like how name drop Zach Nipper does and on Waste of Pain, right? He doesn't see the beauty that could come from him, but Connor thinks his art is just that. So I think it's really noticeable in the line, how their eyes seem to follow you, like a hated addiction, their beauty carved out of absolutes you could never claim or even envision. And I think it's a really powerful way of describing kind of dysmorphia in like whatever form. Like, you're seeing others as these gorgeous statues. They're carved of stone and they're the picture of perfection. You can never be that, right? You could never claim that. And they looking down at you for who you are. But Connor is trying to reason with her like, no, you do have that same beauty. I wish you could see that.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely is kind of like that callback from Waste of Pain, as you're saying, of like that imposter syndrome of not only am I faking it, but everybody knows I'm faking it. Like, you know, you can see through me. Yeah. I mean, this one is, I don't know if you'll agree with me, but this one's kind of tough to talk about because it is so simple. There's really not much to like dig deep on. Yeah. I have those exact words in my notes. So you, same wavelength.
And it's just like, and I don't care. Like, I think that's the fact that it can still be this profound and this powerful. And yet, like, you know, you don't have to wrap everything in enigma to make it profound and, you know, resonate with you. It could be an honest verse of longing.
Or a simple song of hope.
Or a simple song of hope. Which I think it is. It is both hopeful and longing. I don't think that this is in, you know, obviously it's a song and it's fiction to some extent. So I don't necessarily think that this is like, I'm longing to be back with you, Laura. But it is, I think, more like, you know, if make war is, you know, the spiteful, backhanded last words of a crumbling relationship, this one is more like the genuine, like, I love that. I think I would call tonight if I still had your number.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that, like, you know, it's a different path, but I'm still going to express the fact that, like, I'm disappointed with how I betrayed your sister when, you know, she asked me to, like, look after you. You know, whatever the context is there, it's like, he shattered more than one person's trust. So, it is maybe a longing for forgiveness, which, you know, is, as we know, a theme that happens further down Connor's music.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like you said, I didn't really have much else to say specifically. I just wanted to highlight some of those lyrics. You know, sore throats, the way he describes her and that, like, dysmorphia. I think another one of them is people who suffer. You know, we're in high demand, Laura, us people who suffer, because we don't take to arguing. We're quick to surrender. And it's just kind of this, like, funny tongue-in-cheek kind of self-deprecating joke that is, I don't know, it comes across really, really great in this song. But yeah, that's all I really have for this one. But we are kind of reaching our conclusion here. And one of the most, I'd say, of the Connor Oberst, the Bright Eyes fandom, like, one of the favorite songs in the discography.
So this is an epic.
Yeah,
this is the Iliad of of Connor Oberst. I mean, is there any other song that you could think of off the top of your head that goes, like, excluding vignettes and interstitials and that kind of thing? Like, can you think of any other song from them that goes for this long, like, proper, like, singing and song?
Music? You're going to put me on the spot like that.
I mean, I don't know. So it's like anything you put is, like, better than what I've got.
My first thought was maybe One for You, One for Me. But I think that's shorter than I'm thinking, especially because it has, like, the ending. Mm. And then my other one would be We Must Belong Somewhere.
That's a good one.
But that's pretty few and far between.
Yeah, that's fair. But
that's, like, the only other one I can think of that's close.
Because this one's just like, oof. Like, I feel like this is kind of like a kitchen sink situation where, like, yeah. Oh, man, even that, like, the brief foray into politics comes back where he kind of calls out, like, the very popular news networks and stuff. Mm-hmm. A general discontent with the way that, you know, the U.S. was handling their, can we call it an invasion?
Yeah, right? Can.
I mean, I guess I'd be disappointed if he was satisfied with the invasion, but.
Yeah, the song is definitely a bit of a ramble. Mm. But I think it's held together just by thoughts of the state of the world rather than just being focused on any single point. Like you said, like, you get some of the politics in there. I think the best way I thought of describing it is, like, how could we not turn out this way with everything that's going on?
that's I think that's the crux of the song, or those are all of the little random thoughts he has, is like, and this is messed up, and this is messed up, and our schooling system does not breed creativity, and these wars are senseless, and the media is trivializing and glorifying different parts of it. Like it's basically just a giant finger point at hashtag the culture of the country, really. Probably you could say on a more universal level, but obviously a lot of these are pointed specifically to the U.S.
Oh yeah, I think both of us could speak very, very deeply, passionately, and for way too long about how the education system really doesn't engender too much creativity.
Yeah, for sure.
I do think it's interesting that through that entire ramble, that it ends with like the acknowledgement that he is part of that reciprocal. He's part of that reciprocal nature of love in all of its forms. Like, you know, throughout the song, there's like the speaker touches on different sorts of relationships, both with like more personal entities, like between the speaker and his father, and a mother and her children, and the people and their government, the people and the people giving them their news. And then through all that, the question is basically like, is it then enough? Is love enough to like help us survive the not so great parts of what I just spent like 8 minutes rambling about?
Yeah. And you know, maybe not a novel idea, but I think one that's important to mention, important to learn. And I think for Connor, it that lesson came for him when he reached his lowest point. So I'm gonna do both. I'm gonna both wrap up my thoughts on the album because it ties in with, like, you know, my thoughts on the song. So remember going back to the Fevers and Mirrors episode, I felt that Connor kind of referenced this apparent suicide attempt that he mentions in the song, Waking in Relief, Weak from Whiskey and Pills. So I mentioned on Fevers and Mirrors that seemed to be a catalyst for Connor. Like this, that was kind of what was going to help him move forward, reaching his lowest to then start the climb to a happy, healthy life, or just like as close to normal as you can feel. So kind of after going through Lifted and getting back to this song that kind of spurred that idea, even if the specifics aren't correct, like I'm not going to pretend to know his life. Like, yes, when he was in Chicago, I looked up the medical, like, no, nothing like that. But I think the spirit of the point is there. Like, and this is my summary. This is my summation with all the imagery and the animals and everything like that. Like, Connor was lost in the forest and the dark of the wilderness, the hungry beasts closing in on him. And he reached his lowest point. He's resigned to death, really. He's exasperation, kind of like what we were talking about on Don't Know When But A Day Is Gonna Come. But at the same time, this death was his rebirth, that moment of awakening for him when he knew he could no longer follow the map, and the compass cracked that left him circling around in the forest of despair. So from that point, and through the compassion of his father, and I'm assuming the other important people in his life, that's when he found his search for meaning and the mystery of what life is. Like, why are we here? The core question of existentialism, why do we exist? And I think this is like when Connor, again, he might not have the answer, but at least he has something to search for and to look for and find that purpose and find that gratitude to be here. And, you know, in summary, let's just hope to love and to be loved is enough.
I kind of don't want to say anything else. I feel like you just wrapped that up so beautifully. Like, God, why do I have to spit my gross words into this microphone? We should just leave it here.
Spit away.
I mean, I'm just going to plus what you said because I could not honestly have said it better myself. I do like the sort of book ending ideas where we start with the big picture of, you know, it's just too much is going on. The world is too big for you to wrap your head around all at once. And then we end with a more narrowed focus of, like you said, yes, the big picture is way too big to take in all at once.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got this focus, this meaning, this purpose for being, it's something to search for, something to, like, you know, if it seems too big, focus on the smaller details. And in this case, looking for that, and I would say, like, let's wrap up love with authenticity.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, or, you know, honesty. And not necessarily, like, in the way that there's been that tension throughout a lot of the albums that we've talked about, which is like, oh, you know, what's the difference between me and this persona that is singing on this album? But, like, accepting that there is authenticity in that, and that there were elements of, you know, a true self in that art, and to love that and to be okay with that too. Like, you know, you have your Make War and you also have your Laura Laurent. You're allowed to be both.
Yeah. I always appreciate that because I get all, like, rambly and I start to lose my point in the middle of the sentence that I'm speaking. And then you just come in and you're like, you make it more succinct. You know, buddy, I love you.
And I love you. And I hope that is enough.
I mean, from other people, maybe, but you kind of need a little bit more. Maybe like a subscription on Patreon or something like that. you know, maybe then it would be enough.
You know, I don't ask for much except your undying love, devotion, and money thrown at us on Patreon or Ko-fi.
This is our tithe.
You want our love? You gotta work for it.
Oh boy. Well, I think that seems fitting to end a Bright Eyes Conor Oberst podcast with a little bit of dig at organized religion.
Awesome.
Beautiful. Oh boy. Hate mobs. Oh, we don't have a big enough following for a hate mob, let's be real. Anyway.
Yeah. You can't get canceled if you never get big. Hey.
Well, excellent, excellent album. I'm glad to have gone through it again. Definitely, just like always, it helps me better contextualize and understand the songs. And I do like that we kind of conflicted at some parts during it too. Like, you know, I again, in the same way that we do sometimes, it's like, it's never contentious or like, I think that it's the beauty of art, right? The different interpretations is what makes it so, I don't know, enigmatic, I guess.
Absolutely. And I mean, honestly, I would be a little disappointed if we didn't, like, you know, if we agreed more and more, like, it's like, oh, we're just listening to the, basically, it's bad enough we kind of, like, sound the same and we have similar, we have this similar love of Conor Oberst, and it's just like, oh, wow, it's two guys that sound really, really similar to each other, agreeing all the time. Is it the same person? Is it one lonely person just, like, pitching their voice up alternative.
We are about the same height, and we're both like extremely attractive, jacked.
You know? Golden gods.
Real Adonises.
My goodness. Like the whole story of Narcissus staring into the pool of water and then going to embrace himself and drowning. That's our origin story, except we found the reflection was real. And we just washed fell ashore in love
with each other.
And we washed ashore clutching each other, and between us was a milk carton, a milk crate just full of Conor Ogre's finals. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Beautiful. Well, I can't think of a better way to end the episode. So think of this when you go to sleep tonight.
Oh, hey, it's wrap-up time. I know. I come here to sully the beautiful ending, the beautiful natural ending that we had to the podcast. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Well, all I really want to say is thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for supporting us, and really the engagement, the conversations. They're so much fun to have. And again, a big shout out to our patrons, Goldie, Lad, and Eric. We love you guys. We appreciate you. Well, again, check us out on Instagram at Connor's Basement. If you want to get involved in some conversation, we post reminders and things like that there for new episodes. But next up, well, we've got the double album. We're not entirely sure which direction we'll be headed in terms of what comes first or anything like that. So, you know, there you go. Perfect plug for the Instagram. Make sure you check it out so you stay informed on what's going to be coming next. Anyway, catch you next time, and have a great one.